Hey there, welcome back to Rogue Startups. I'm your host, Craig Hewitt. Here I'm joined by Ed Freifogel in this episode. Ed and I talk through all things bootstrapping, personal branding and social media, growth trajectory here in a non-zero interest rate environment, I think a headwind that a lot of us are facing, and just generally catch up. Ed has been a longtime friend, investor, advisor, and someone that I love to check in on because he's got a really great perspective on kind of bootstrapping versus funding and kind of a little bit broader kind of macro market that we're in and the things that we're all seeing as a result of that. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Ed Freifogel. Okay, Ed, so we're going to talk about at least two things today. One is I want to talk about in-person events because you run an in-person event associated with your business, and we're going to talk about personal brand and its potential detriment to a company. But let's save that one because it's a little more spicy for later. But OpenCage, you guys do geocoding.
Yeah, we do geocoding. We provide an API for geocoding. So our target audience is software developers that need geocoding. So, you know, we have our site and we have some media associated with the site. But the reality is, Craig, despite what you might read in the newspapers or whatever, geocoding is kind of boring.
No way.
So, so to try to make it more interesting, we also do run an event series, which is called GeoMob. And I've actually been running that now for almost 15 years. And basically, it's a meetup for location-based service software developers. And in conjunction with that, then when COVID started, we started a podcast, hosted, of course, on Castos. And if I can slap myself on the back a little bit here, this very week, our 200th episode of the podcast is about to come out. So if anyone out there, thank you very much. If anyone out there is into location-based services and what's happening in the geospatial technology scene, please give that a listen. And we've been running this event for a long time. Originally, at that time, I was living in London, and it was just in London. And now, actually, we do it in many different European cities. And it's not just me running it in different cities. Different people run it or whatever. But it's become quite an interesting kind of community.
So just to, take a half a step, maybe not back, but above that, I think one of the challenges that a lot of people have, myself included, is, marketing that you can't attribute growth or ROI to. How do you guys think about, okay, we're going to run this event, it's for the betterment of the community, and maybe it helps our brand a little bit or something. But do you all think about what's our ROI on all your time and money spent on this?
I do think about it, but I've come to the sad conclusion that there's no chance we can measure it. Right.
Okay. Or do you care about it then?
Well, basically, so there are two solutions to that. One is I keep the event. I am spending some time on the event, on organizing it and things, but I'm not spending a lot of money on the event. The event intentionally is kind of kept very informal.
Okay.
Also because our audience is software developers or whatever, you know, they don't really want a big, slick production. They care about interesting talks and topics and stuff and things like that. But it is a big point of frustration that be it the podcast or the event. Very occasionally, people give me feedback. They're like, oh, I found out about your business because of the event or whatever. But usually that's not the case. I just kind of take it on good faith that by doing these things, people are becoming aware of the brand. I do some actually very, very basic guerrilla tactics, to push the brand. I mean, so of course we present ourselves as a sponsor of the event and things like that. But definitely with the audience of software developers, if I'm constantly if I'm always just hyping my brand, people turn off very quickly.
Yeah.
And no one wants that. So for example, what I do is at the event, we have some talks and then we go to the pub and people can drink beers on my tab. Okay. And the way that the tab works is I give everyone my business card and then I tell the bartender, anyone who shows you my business card, gets a drink on my tab. And so that way everyone now has my business card and so I definitely see, I make connections through that.
Yeah.
And ultimately, you have to have there's some element of faith that in the very long term, these connections will turn into meaningful business relationships. I will say this though as well, Craig. It running the event and the podcast is a great door opener in the sense that I can contact anyone in the industry now and say, hey, do you want to come talk at my event, or do you, you know, would you like to be a guest on the podcast? And that's a much easier conversation than saying like, hey, would you like to buy a lot of geocoding?
Right.
You know, like, right. You know, one, and then we start having a dialogue, and then at some point people are like, oh, what do you do? Oh, that's interesting. Oh, actually we need that. You know, rather than, you know, me kicking the door open and saying like, hey, I'm here to sell you geocoding. Like, that doesn't really work.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I think this is the reality of a lot of like marketing and growth these days, is there's not a clear, solid line between like an activity and customers. It's more infrequent to have a direct line between an activity and customers. And there's things like a podcast or a YouTube channel, or events or sponsoring other people or whatever it is to get your name out there and hope good things will happen in the future.
What the thing is, all of those things, I mean, particularly the podcast, but also of course the in-person events, order, they're very authentic, right? They can't be faked. Right. And people have gotten so numb online and I guess offline. So I just, you know, I mean, ads don't work, you know, like just generic banner ads or whatever, you know, like maybe that works in some marginal way in terms of like awareness. But like, I don't know, especially for our target audience. I mean, 100% of my audience uses an ad blocker. Right. 100%. So,
right.
So, I mean,
yeah.
Like, you know, so I need to find ways that get the message across that actually this audience in a way that they want to receive it. And so I think tools like the podcast, I mean, it is very authentic. And what we do, for example, on the podcast is we have, you know, we have interviews, we have guests, but then every fourth or fifth or sixth episode is myself and my co-host talking about our businesses and our problems. And then people start to follow the story, you know, and they, you know, maybe we, you know, themes come up again and again. And all of a sudden people have kind of emotional attachment to your business, or at the very least, it's a differentiator versus, you know, my five competitors or whatever. It's something that it's at least something emotionally that they can kind of, you know, hang their coat on and be like, okay, this one is the one I like versus the other guys.
Yeah.
So
I didn't mean to segue too early into like the personal stuff, but like, I think this is something that you and I emailed about, which is like, founders being active on social media or podcasts or YouTube or whatever, as like the face of the brand and like the good and the bad that comes from that. And like, I guess for context, like, I go back and forth on it. You know, I think sometimes I can and should be like the face of the brand and the person that's out there promoting Kastos, and that I am important in the growth of the brand at some point. And sometimes, like you pointed out, it's a liability. Like if we ever want to go sell the company in the future, like Craig is not transferable. You know, I mean, like I'll go and I'll stay and whatever, but at some point, like I wouldn't. And like I surely just won't be with, maybe I'll be with Kastos forever, I don't know. But like, it's probably more likely that at some point I won't be the person running the business. And if we've built growth on a personal brand, like how valuable and transferable is the business, if that's what it's built on. But then at the same time, you're saying like, you bring this authenticity to it. Like, I don't know. I there's surely a middle ground there.
Well, yes. I mean, so I should say, I hope, at least in my efforts, I'm trying to make it not about me, but about, you know, the problem we're trying to solve and what we're doing. And the branding is always about the company, not about me. You know, so, but this is something I really struggle with, because I see all the people on social media, on Twitter or whatever, or for example, on LinkedIn. I mean, on LinkedIn, it is very, very difficult to promote a company. And all the advisors say like, oh no, it has to be from your personal account.
Yep.
And I'm like, well, how is that scalable, man? I mean, so first of all, they're like, oh, well, the step one, you need to hire a virtual assistant and give them access to your LinkedIn account. I'm like, I don't feel great about that one. But okay, imagine I overcome that hurdle. But where is this going? I mean, because if in 5 years I want to sell my business, are we also selling my LinkedIn account if that's the primary sales channel, you know, or my Twitter account or whatever? And I do get it in that people have emotional attachments to other people, and you don't really, you know, have an attachment so much to a company or a brand, or it's much easier to build the attachment to a person. But I think a lot of people in the bootstrapper community are kind of overdoing it on this, on it's always being about them. And I can tell you, especially in my field, I mean, maybe it's obviously this may vary from industry to industry, but like none of my customers care who runs the service mm-hmm. at all. They care that the service works well. They care that it does what they need. They care that the price is reasonable, you know, and I think I try to use my event or whatever as a way that they become familiar with the brand so that they try the service. But no one's going to buy because they like me. Yeah. Absolutely not. Yeah. I mean, because they like me, they're going to try. I'm going to be on the candidate list. But then the service has to deliver. And if it delivers, then maybe they'll purchase. But I don't know. I think a lot of founders are going way too far in this direction of like, it's about, you know, me, you know. I don't know. It just leaves a bad feeling in my stomach that it's not going to end well, you know?
I think you said it right. Like if I think about my kind of ambition with it is like, just how can I get Castos into the conversation? How can I get us into the sphere of somebody who wants to start a podcast or wants to do something different with their podcast? Like if I can be that whatever spokesperson, to do that, like I think it has to be me. It can't be the company, because like, yeah, nobody, like I don't follow any companies on Twitter, and like LinkedIn is definitely not the place for it. But I do think there's like a limit, either in terms of like time or kind of scalability, that I think this is like a viable path, you know? Like it might get us another $1 million, you know, but it's not going to get us 10 more million.
Yeah, I think at some point you've got to make it the brand. I mean, so as an example, in our terms of our social media, so I'm always thinking about our space is geospatial. So I'm like, how can we prove that we're the geospatial experts? So as an example, we do we used to do it on Twitter. Now we do it on Mastodon because that's kind of where our audience is. But we do a trivia contest once a week, once a month, a geo trivia contest. Okay. Where we post kind of a trivia question, but it like usually with the twist, and then people reply and there's not just one answer, but it's multiple kind of answers and things. And it creates a little competition or whatever, but like I could do that under my own account. Right. And probably in the beginning it would have been more successful, mm-hmm. but it's much better to do it under the company account. Now the company account is kind of really growing and surging, and I feel much better about that because then it shouldn't be about me, the individual, because yeah. Now of course I can, you know, at some point I'm not going to run that. I'm going to have someone else run that once a month or whatever, and they're going to do it on the company account. And it's just not, I don't know when, I mean, you talked about YouTube. I mean, literally you see these people who are like, it's their YouTube channel. It's their face. You know, and I obviously, Craig, when you've got, you know, aesthetic material like yourself to work with, I understand why you take that forward. But but I don't know, man. I
think at the end of the day, it's like it's a tool. That's how I think about it. It's a tool in our marketing tool belt. It's not the only one. Is it the most important one? No. Is it a pretty easy one to do some of, you know? Can I put out a podcast episode under my own name every or most weeks? Yep. Can I post on LinkedIn once a day and on Twitter a few times a week? Yep. Like, does that help? I'll tell you where 100% it helps is every single sales conversation I get on for Castos Productions. The second thing somebody says is, you know, I ask, hey, how'd you find out about us? Oh, blah, 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 blah. Okay. And then I looked you up on LinkedIn. 100% of the time. And so if I don't have a presence on LinkedIn or I'm talking about garbage that isn't related, then they're like, the hell is this guy? Like,
So,
how do I trust them?
Craig, of course, obviously I have a page on LinkedIn. I have I'm not saying the founder should not have a page on LinkedIn. The question is, do you, every day spend an hour on LinkedIn and I mean, you can see these people who, where it's obvious they're kind of forcing the content, you know, and it's just like, hey guys, today I ate breakfast and that made me reflect on peace in the Middle East. And you're just like, come on, man. What is this shit? Like, honestly, I don't enjoy, I go on LinkedIn to look up people, but I don't browse LinkedIn because it's garbage. It's all garbage. It's all this
okay. So I saw something the other day that was amazing. It's called Silicon Valley. Have you seen this?
No, what is this?
It is the most amazing piece of marketing I've seen in like a really long time. I just put it in the chat here. So it's a front end design company that built this. It's kind of like Oregon Trail for startups. It's like you're a venture funded startup. If you do this, then what happens? If you do this, then what happens? Okay. And it's just a page, and it has, run rate and funding and, buttons, levers you can pull in the business. And it's great. Like, this is the kind of marketing like I wish we could do. Like, how can we do some...
Right, but this was not... It was not some... It's not about the founder. It's about the tool and the use case for the user.
Yep, 100%. Right? 100%. And I see... I'll tell you who I see doing this really well right now is Matt Wensing, right? With like these calculators he's building and he's building all these calculators and he's putting them out there. But then like a company like us could build a calculator. And we're thinking about this and talking to Matt about it is like, how could we build like how much money can you make from your podcast calculator? Like that's pretty good. That's pretty good marketing. And that belongs like under the company. But I think like this was a really good example for me of like, you're not on the hamster wheel of like churning out blog posts that whatever have, whatever kind of value. Like this is interesting and has personality and like has brand to it.
First of all, I should say, I'm a fan of Matt. I'm actually an investor in his startup, both directly and via Tiny Seed. So obviously I'm cheering for him to win, but he used to have a podcast. And actually, I used to listen to the podcast because it was great. Because I would learn it was a good podcast, but also as a way to like keep tabs on how he's doing. And at some point, they got burned out, right? And they stopped doing the podcast. And that's the thing that with this, like, when it's about like the founder, and I'm not saying theirs was just about them as founders, but at some point you get burned out and then you stop. And that's why I think the emphasis should be much more on the voice of the business, not the voice of the founder, depending on the industry. Again, I can totally see the case, Craig, in your industry, when your customers are people who are trying to promote themselves, then it makes sense for you to do it because, to serve an example for them. But in other cases, I do think at some point, people put in all this effort and this like continually posting and videos and at some point like the crash comes, and then at that point would it have been better if they had it from the beginning been slow but steady in the voice of the company rather than push in the voice of the individual? Obviously, everyone will have to know for themselves and for their business and for their industry or whatever. But I don't know. I'm a bit hesitant, actually. Actually, in the last year, I've kind of reduced all my own personal stuff. Like I quit Twitter.
What do you think? What do you think? I pretty much quit Twitter too. Like, what do you think is going to happen there? I saw something this week that it's going to be paid. I was like, what?
Could be, don't know, don't care. I think at some point Musk will be out, will leave under his own volition or be bought out or some private equity company will take it over. There will continue to be a thing called Twitter, but the magic's over. The people have left. I mean, especially like in our niche, the software developers, particularly in Europe, have moved to Mastodon. Mm. And like, you know, I get it that that's not everyone's cup of tea or whatever, but the move has been made and like people are not going back.
Yeah.
And frankly, when the few times I now look on Twitter, I mean, I don't do it on my personal account, but we do still have a company account in case people DM us about problems or whatever. And it, but it's, the product has become bad, man. It's just videos or whatever. Like if I want to watch videos, I'll go to YouTube.
Yeah.
And it's all like non-relevant videos. And it's just, it's not where I want to hang out anymore.
Yeah.
So I made the move to Mastodon. I've slightly made the move to Mastodon. I've also made the move to just reducing my consumption of social media quite a lot, which was probably a good thing. So, you know,
I think
full
so.
Credit to Elon.
I think so. Thank you, Elon. Yeah.
But you know what I, you know what, another thing, Craig, I mean, I say this because I mean, here we are on Rogue Startups, right? And I can tell you, I was I loved Rogue Startups. For some reason, this was like one of the first podcasts I ever listened to. I think we met at MicroConf like 5 years ago, 6 years ago. And you're like, oh, I have a podcast. And so I started listening to it. And I really got into following the story of you and Dave. And every week it became part of my, like, you know, while I'm at the gym, on, you know, I've listened to the podcast. And it was really sad when Dave stopped. When you, first you guys kind of, you know, you started publishing a bit less. And then finally Dave stopped. And I get it. People get tired and get burned out.
Yep.
And just have, you know, life events come up. I totally get it. But it is kind of sad, man. Oh, I feel like over the last couple of years, all of the first generation of Bootstrap podcasts have kind of, many of them have kind of gone quiet or stopped. And it's weird. It's like losing a friend.
Yeah. I mean, for me too, right? I mean, yeah. Dave and I talk almost every week for 8 years, you know? Yeah. And like, yeah. And I totally get it. Like just not. You know, I think like in the kind of current incantation, you can say like, it's just not that interesting. I don't have that much going on anymore. I don't want to share what's going on with me because it's not all sunshine and roses. I'm not speaking for Dave. I'm speaking for me. Like sometimes I don't want to do the podcast because like, I just don't have anything good to say. You know, it's like, fuck.
No,
like,
I get it. You gotta find the balance of what you can share and what you can't and how frequently. And I'm not saying it's easy. It's not easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But all I'm saying is, I mean, there are a lot of different founders and companies or whatever where, you know, I felt like I was on the journey with them.
Yeah.
And then it's like from 1 week to the next, you're like, yeah, the bus ends here.
Yeah.
And you're like, what? We didn't get to the destination, man. Come on.
There's not another bus to take you the rest of the way.
I'm in the parking lot outside Terminal 3. Like, you know,
I'll tell you, like from my perspective, I started the podcast, just to like try to be in this world. Cause like I was listening to a bunch of like Tropical MBA and Pat Flynn and startups with the rest of us. I was like, fuck, I just want to be like those guys. And so I started a podcast and then Dave was like my third guest. And like that went like a long way. And I think like to a degree, I've gone from the learner to the person that knows something, you know, like I know some stuff about like running a business and fundraising and hiring and all this kind of stuff. And so like now I think, it sounds really douchey, but like, it's kind of like my obligation to be the person that shares what I know to help other people, because like a whole shit ton of people have helped me through their podcasts and through their YouTube and stuff like that. And that's about the only reason I still do it. You know, I don't think that like, me having a successful podcast will really like grow Castos. I don't care about my personal brand really, but like, I think it's pretty cool if I can share like one thing that helps somebody else out. Like that's the reason that like I wanted to keep doing the podcast.
Well, first of all, I think that's wonderful. And frankly, I've learned so much from your podcast, from many of the others. I mean, I listen to podcasts all the time, you know, and it is one of my main channels. And you know, one thing I love about it also is it's so immediate. Like everyone, I guess a lot of media is this way, but I can remember, you know, I've spent my entire career in Europe and, you know, when the internet first started, you know, 98, when I started working, people would say like, oh, in Europe, we're like 5 years behind, you know, California or whatever. And now like the podcast comes out, I listen to it at the same time everyone else listens to it, right? Yeah. Like the new ideas, the tactics or whatever, we get them, you know, exactly the same day. And it's gotten so much faster. And it's really useful also if you live in a place, you live somewhere where you're not, maybe you don't have a local community or whatever to connect with, and you're getting the same lessons from like these absolute masters that who, and that's so powerful. That's so powerful, which is why it's also, it's hurtful when like all of a sudden, you know, the podcast ends and you're like, what, wait, hang on, wait, we're just getting going here, man. So I don't know. I'm hopeful for a comeback, man. Dave, are you listening? I think we could take this thing in a different direction, kind of a plot twist. Dave comes back. It was maybe like the whole season was all a bad dream or something.
Dave, if you're listening, so let's do it. Yeah. You know what? Something you said really like struck a nerve is like being in remote locations. And I think I've always kind of lived in this part of my life, physically kind of disconnected, you know, like first I was like nights and weekends and had a day job and all this kind of stuff. Then we moved to France. Nobody that I knew was doing it where I lived. Now we're in Rhode Island. Nobody that I know does this. And I really, really, really miss that. Like I'll go to conferences. I went to a marketing conference last week, and it's just like going to my microconf, you know. It's like, oh man, just like a whole group of people that do exactly what I do. When we first started talking, you asked if I missed living in Europe, and the answer is like definitely, and we're considering moving back, but I only want to move somewhere where there are going to be people that do this, because I really, really, really miss like, let's all go to the same co-working place, or like y'all have like the Barcelona, you know, I don't know if you still have it, like the monthly lunch or whatever. And I would just kill for that. I think that's the thing, as we do remote for a long time, the like in-person thing is so important.
It is. It's critical. It really is critical. Well, first of all, yes, Craig, you should come back to Europe, obviously, yeah, because we're going to get the scene going here. And,
we're going to before next November, for sure.
The scene is actually quite strong. And actually, in 2 weeks, we got MicroConf Europe coming up. So I'm really looking forward to that. So I don't know where we're going here, Craig. I feel like I'm kind of rambling beyond saying, like, first of all, people should not. I think founders should be very hesitant, unless their industry demands it, to really push themselves as the marketing channel. But then if you do and you have a podcast and I have committed to your story, you got to keep going. Come on, man. You can't leave me hanging here. So, but I think that is kind of the crux of the dilemma, man, is like, this is exactly it. It's so dangerous to get on that treadmill. And then you start and you're gone and you start to see the results. But then it's like, you can never get off. And if you do, you're going to disappoint your audience. Right. Yeah. So what does that, how does that play out during your acquisition? You know, if someone buys your business, are they, you know, what's going to happen there? Are you setting the business up for failure the minute you like pull the plug on your podcast or on your YouTube channel or whatever, or your inspirational LinkedIn quote of the day or whatever it is your thing is? So
I mean, I'd love to hear like folks listening that, you know, work at FE International or Quiet Light or wherever, or folks who have done this. Like, I'd love to hear their experiences, because I think mostly you're right. Like, it's a liability more than an asset, probably. To companies, but I don't know. I have a question for you about in-person events, because something that I would love to do is like do in like small in-person events. Like, how would you think about, you know, whether it's Castos or anybody listening, like abstract away the ideas and the framework about like starting local kind of small meetups?
I think it's, you know, I mean, so I can just say I do it and I love it. But the reason I love it is because it provides a social outlet for me as a way to meet people and things like that. It's, as I said, it's not because I can immediately measure the marketing value of it. And it frankly, in some ways, it's very similar to starting a podcast in the sense of, like, it's not that you do one event and then all of a sudden, like, you know, the money comes rolling in. It's more like you need to create a process that's maintainable and keep it going. And, you know, I'm sure the advice, anyone who does a podcast is like, the first 20 episodes, you're going to get very little feedback, right? You got to keep it going. You got to create consistency. And that's something actually I think a lot about with our events, but also with our business, is how do we do processes that are maintainable? That how do we keep it simple? How do we keep it affordable? I don't know. Quick, you should maybe do it. How can we delegate to volunteers and things? So now we have different cities, and basically we have very loose. You know, I'm like, look, here's my advice, and here are the lessons I've learned along the way, and here are one or two firm rules that we have. So like in our case, we say you cannot charge people to speak, and you cannot charge the attendees. But if you stay within that framework, then, you know, you can open GeoMob. You know, if you want to start GeoMob Rhode Island, let's go, Craig. You know.
Okay.
And
so, so do you all license it, or like, do they?
No, we
run
don't,
it under it, your kind of umbrella, or?
Yeah, they kind of run it under our umbrella. Because the thing is, if someone wants to have the local event, they can do it without me, right? Like, they just can't. The only thing they're getting from me is that they get the name. And we promote it in our channels to our audience, and we have a website, and, you know, we'll feature their event on the website and things like this. So there's a very minimal level of infrastructure. But if I try to impose all kind of rules, at some point the people are just gonna be like, screw this, I'll just do it myself and give it a different name, right?
Yeah.
You know, and also, you know, I mean, these people are doing this in all different countries, whatever. And I don't know what's normal in their country in terms of, like, you know, what time they should have it at, or what type of venue, or, you know, should they serve food or not serve food, or, you know, like, that's up to them. That's up to them.
Yeah.
What I do tell them, though, is like, here's what I've learned in the 10 plus years that we've been doing it. But one thing I do see, we have had some people who are like, oh, I want to do it in my city, and we're going to do, of course, we're going to have food and all this stuff. And we're going to, you know, I'm going to get the biggest speakers, and I'm going to make it this whole big production. And those people start with the best of intentions, and they have, you know, a big bang event. And then, you know, a year later, they're like, this is a lot of work, actually, and I'm kind of busy, and, you know.
Yeah.
And what I always tell people is, like, it's better to do less, but do the basics well, and not have a big production, and just, you know, get the wheels turning and get it going. And it's much more about the consistency and the repetitions than it is about each individual event being some major big thing, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At least in our case, that's kind of what we're striving for.
So let me give a couple, like, for instances. So, like, say we want to do an event, we would do it in Boston. Yep. Or like one of the suburbs of Boston.
Sure.
Rent a bar, maybe, or rent a little conference space, and then go to the bar afterwards, have a couple of speakers, have it be a couple of hours, one evening.
Perfect. We're talking that's exactly my event. Oh my God, yeah. Craig, I do my event. I mean, Boston's probably more expensive, but for example, last night we had the event in Barcelona. Basically, for step one, is I find a venue that I can use for free. So in our case, a university or a co-working space or whatever, and say, look, I'm going to bring 25, 50 people. Of course, I'm going to feature, I'm going to say thank you. And, you know, if the venue host wants to, you know, very briefly say hello at the beginning and, you know, tell us why their co-working space is great. Fantastic. Then we have a few talks, and then we go to a bar, and, you know, I pay for the drinks, and the whole thing costs me, I don't know, 250 euro, you know, 500 euro maybe. And if it's a big crowd or whatever. So I intentionally keep it very low production value. And much more, you know. And then as we started going, people are always like, oh, can you make videos? Can you, like, no, because that's a lot of work. Like, I don't, you know, to make videos is a lot of work. Like, someone needs to have the equipment. Someone needs to know what they're doing. and I try to keep it as bare bones as possible. And then afterwards, what I do, of course, I take pictures at the event. And then afterwards, I post some pictures on our on the social media or whatever, and then people see the event, and that's it. That's kind of all I do.
How often do you do them in each location, like the one in Barcelona or the one in London?
It totally depends on the city in terms of, you know, obviously a city like London is huge and there's a lot of things going on, and we've been doing it there for 10 years, so people are volunteering, and we have a very established community. Barcelona, we might have like two a year. London, we might have four or five a year. It depends. It's also driven heavily by, you know, do people volunteer to speak? Yeah. Like, I don't, of course, I will chase people or try to get people, or there are certain people I want to talk with, I'll contact them. But the ideal scenario is that you kind of create the flywheel where the event, enough people are coming to the event. And at the event, anyone who's new, I'm like, oh, are you going to speak at the next one? You know, I try to line up the speakers and get them going. And we kind of intentionally keep the talks very short. Each talk is 15 minutes. So that way, even if the speaker is terrible, which sometimes they are, you know, you can kind of sit through it. And we just get four or five different talks, and that's kind of it. And then I can imagine this could work really well for Kestis in the sense of, you know, you have a meetup of local podcasters where they talk about their problems and whatever. And probably the challenge with this event would be podcasters like to talk. So it's pretty hard to keep people
15
to
minutes
a short,
would be pretty tough. Yeah.
15 minutes. Yeah. But I will say this, though, Craig. People, one thing I have noticed is post COVID and the switch to you know, working from home and stuff, people want events. People want to go to events. I mean, you know, people are working at home 3 days a week, 5 days a week, whatever. People are desperate to now actually go out and make contact.
Yeah.
So you can really feel it in the audience. I mean, since COVID, the event has been bigger than ever. With no change to the recipe or promotion or anything. It's just people are kind of hungry to make connections.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, I very much am. I mean, I work here at home all day and then the kids come home and that's life. And we have stuff on the weekends and yeah, like to go and be with people is amazing when I get the chance. So yeah, definitely. We're not the only ones hungry for it probably. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it could be, I mean, the key is to find a recipe and, you know, can you then repeat that in the different cities or regions or whatever?
But, yeah.
You know, I think it could be a good model.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting, you know,
It's kind of a multi-local model, you know?
Right. 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 Cool. So Ed, you're going to MicroConf Europe in 2 weeks. So this episode will go out before then, I think, or right around that time. So folks who want to catch up with you, you'll be there?
I will be there. I'm really looking forward to it. We're back in Lisbon, which I think is a great venue. It's at a very nice hotel. I'm ready, man. Like, people are hungry for events and no one's hungrier than me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm jealous. I'd love to be there. Maybe next year we'll be there. Cool. Ed, best space for folks to connect with you and chat it up is Mastodon.
Mastodon is the best place, or you can just email me. If you can't figure it out, then you can check out my LinkedIn page, where I don't think you're going to find any inspirational quotes or stories you know, pictures of how my breakfast inspired me or anything like that. So, but nevertheless, you could at least connect with me there.
So. All right. Fair enough. It was good to catch up. But, thank you.
Wait, Craig, of course, they should also listen to my podcast, which if they're interested in geo stuff, the GeoMob podcast. So.
Sounds good. It's good to catch up, man. Thank you.
Take it easy, man. Bye.